This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey guys, if you listened to the last episode, you would have heard a similar announcement up front to this one. Ollie's audacity corrupted the audio, me, and he had to re-record it. So at the end of this episode, I went all in on being super patronising, telling him to make sure he'd saved it properly, because it was a nightmare to edit back together. Well, apparently karma is a bitch, because my audacity chose to crash while I was trying to save. So, this time it was my turn to have to re-record all my audio and edit it back in. We'd never had a problem with this before with Audacity, but now we've had it two episodes in a row, so we may be looking for a new way to try and record, but maybe not. We'll see how things go. Again, it was a nightmare to edit back together, but I've only got myself to blame this time. So, same disclaimers as last time. The conversation might not flow quite as well as it originally did, but hopefully it's barely even noticeable. Also, we recorded this on Thursday, so not everything we said will make total sense, because time has passed between the recording and the release. But anyway, thanks for listening.
Hello and welcome to the BritRest Roundtable. I'm Ollie Court and with me is Arn Furious.
Hello.
And we are the only two men in Britain who have yet to play Pokemon Go. So instead, we're going to be talking about RevPro Summer Sizzler.
I don't even know what a Pokemon Go is. This is clearly not my thing.
You're not a Pokemon then.
I don't know what that is either. Is that an insult? It sounds like one. I know what a Pikachu is. That's it.
A Pikachu is a Pokemon. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little yellow thing with like a lightning bolt tail. That's the full extent of my Pokemon knowledge. Beginning, middle, and end.
We have eschewed catching Pikachu in order to watch RevPro Summer Sizzler from last Sunday, and now we're gonna talk about it. It was a hell of a show, and lots of stuff coming out of it that's intriguing. And we're going to start off with first match, which was
Before we get underway, I'd just like to say that everything that I was pitching in terms of like why things were happening, none of that happened. So literally all my little fantasy booking spiel from last time, I don't think I got a single thing right.
The booking has been unpredictable, certainly, but it's throwing up a lot of cool matchups, so we'll see. It's intriguing to see where it goes next. The first match was the British Tag Team Championship on the line in a four-way between Johnny Storm and Jody Fleisch, McCluskey and Bruce, everyone's favourite tag team, the Legion of Lords, Gideon Gray and Rishi Ghosh, and the champions, Charlie Garrett and Joel Redman. And this was a pretty exciting way to start off the show, actually.
It seems like their tag division all of a sudden has life in it. Because we've been complaining about the revolutionists and the state of the tag division for like a year. And as soon as they switch the belts, it's like... did you see the Live at the Cockpit they put up on RevPro On Demand?
Haven't seen it yet, no.
Number 8 it is. On that show... they had Redman and Garrett wrestling against McCluskey and Bruce, who I assumed was like being dubbed as a McCluskey brother because the way they introduced him was like, Joel McCluskey and Bruce. Bruce and Joel. So I thought, yeah, but no, he's just Bruce.
Or the Bruce, as he sometimes goes by.
But it was them in a tag team against each other. So it was just those two. It's a really good match. It's probably my favourite McCluskey match. Mm. Like ever.
McCluskey's a lot better in the tag team than he is.
Oh, yeah. Teams. Yeah. Oh, no doubt about it. And that, like in this four way, it kind of covered over anybody's, everyone in the match that had like a weak point, it was all covered up. Yeah. It was very well booked in that respect. Like there was never a point where I turned around and thought, yeah, that guy's kind of exposed out there. This is the kind of match they should have put the Revolutionists in to cover up for the fact that James Castle was a little bit green. Like a year ago, they should have been doing these kind of matches. So I find it weird that they've switched the belts and now they've switched the booking style in the tag division and it's just way better.
Yeah, I thought this really suited like the Legion of Lords, especially. Like they got in their shtick and looked really good doing it. Like they're fluid in their shtick and maybe less so in the wrestling. But here it was all the gimmick and it worked really well.
They could kind of kick back and watch.
Yeah.
When the other guys were kind of throwing spots out there, they'd be just kind of, you know, in the corner going, "What are they doing?" Stop mucking around and try and win the match. One of the crowd shouted at Gideon saying, "What's he doing, Gideon?" when somebody else was doing like a complicated move, and Gideon just turns around and goes, "Well, I don't know." It's very good character work. And I especially like the before the match, like Gideon basically calls his shot, saying like, "We're going to win the match. We're going to use my cane. We're going to hit you in the head with it. And then when the pinfall goes right down, the cane will be nowhere to be seen." And they was doing this whole spiel. I'm like, I'm looking forward to what they're going to do with that. And the way it played out was like Gideon hits, I want to say Charlie Garrett. I really can't remember.
Yeah, I think it was Garrett.
Hits him with the cane, passes the cane to Rishi. And you see Rishi Ghosh absolutely like legging it up the ramp as fast as his little legs are carrying.
He's great at the comedy run.
Oh, it's perfect. Perfect run to the back. And then, of course, you know, Garrett kicks out and Gideon loses. But then, and he's got no backup because Rishi's run into the back to hide the cane.
And then he came out just as the pinfall counted and cried about it afterwards, which I thought was a nice touch.
There was a good balance of everything. You had like the nostalgia with Jody and Johnny. You had the crowd being drawn into everything. You had the big spots from the tag champs. And I thought, what they call themselves? Bruce and McCluskey are calling themselves something. And I can't remember what it is.
The British Young Bloods, I think.
Yeah, not a particularly good idea, I don't think. they actually called themselves the Moonsault King as they came out, McCluskey. And I thought they were going with the Moonsault Kings as a tag team name, which I'd be okay with. But yeah,
two almost came out like they were faces, and then when they got no reaction, immediately resulted in becoming heels.
Yeah, I think that was really well done, because that's the kind of act that they've got, is that they think they're baby faces, but the crowd don't. Mm. But that's how it's supposed to be. So I think that's really well executed. And then you had a load of heat as well from the Legion of Lords. It was a really well done match.
The only bad bit of the match was when Fleisch and Storm and McCluskey and Bruce brawled to the back, Roddy Piper style.
Yeah.
And then just never came back out again. Like, wouldn't have killed you to book this as an elimination match, I think.
Yeah, that's a fair point. It did kind of set up the finish, but then I kind of compensated for that by the fact that I laughed so much at Rishi running to the back. That kind of compensated me for it not making sense.
So this match definitely over-delivered on expectations, considering like it wasn't a particularly hyped match going in, but it definitely got the show off to a hot start, I think.
Yeah, and I'll certainly, I'm all in on Redman and Charlie Garrett as tag champs. I think they've got some real potential there to have a good run. I'll be interested to see who comes in as challengers, because they do tend to rotate people. And if they're doing Global Wars later in the year, then you're looking at another team potentially to come in and challenge. It should be a good match.
Definitely something to look forward to. Next up was probably the match I was most hyped for. Tomohiro Ishii coming in to face Josh Bodum. And this match, it was Ishii formula, but Ishii has the best formula in the world, and I absolutely ate it up. Really satisfying match to watch.
But Ishii is like, he's my favourite guy like there in the business. I really would put him at number one. When we were having that conversation in the pub afterwards, I can't remember who it was, like, was it Mark? Just turned around and said, oh, my favourite wrestlers are. And then you turned around to me and said, like, well, I don't really, I just even know who my favourite wrestlers are. But I would definitely go Ishii at the moment. He's my favourite. I think what he did in this match was perfectly fine. I think Bodum should have cheated more. He cheated a little bit, but he didn't cheat enough for me. I don't think he healed it up enough as well. I think he got a little bit carried away with the fact that he was in there with Ishii. Yeah. Like, he came in thinking, I have to wrestle Ishii's match. I have to do this. I have to do that. And, like, he tried to live up to Ishii's expectations, you know, and he tried to leather him with strikes. And some of the time it worked, some of the time it didn't. What I'd have loved to have seen from him was a bit more old-school heeldom. So, like, when he's really wound Ishii up, like, the time he slapped him and Ishii just stares a hole with him, like, you're going to die now. If he'd have just suddenly realised what he'd done, and gone and hidden in the ropes and got the referee to kind of break it up, and then just kind of made us wait just that little bit longer for him to get leathered, I think that would have drawn a lot of heat. Whereas the match as it was, he just tried to go toe-to-toe and got beaten. That's not really a heel performance for me from Josh Bodum, who has been an excellent heel over the past couple of years. So it surprised me that he didn't use some of the crutches that were available to him as a bad guy.
Reminded me a lot of Ishii's match with Yujiro Takahashi in Sumo Hall from a couple of years ago, which was a legitimate 4.5-star match and Yujiro's best match ever, forever. And they did the same spot there where, like, Bodum, with referee's back turned, like, low-blowed Ishii and almost got the roll-up. So it almost felt like Bodum was filling in for Yujiro, but he's much better than Yujiro, I think. And he did the stuff where he was, like, kicking Ishii around and, like, toying with him. And then Ishii slaps a mat, gets back up, screams in his face. Like, proper good stuff. Like, get you behind Ishii. Ishii, he does a thing where he, like, gets his arms together and, like, almost like he's milking a cow is the only action I can, like, compare it to. But, like, he screams when he does that. And, like, that just makes you want to get behind him. He's such a fantastic babyface.
I certainly think Ishii's performance, I thought, was a lot better than the performance against Damo. I thought he was a lot better here against Bodum. Yeah. But I think Bodum's performance needed to come up a little bit. In terms of being the heel in the match, I think that's where... Because it's basically in Japan, they always go, like, toe-to-toe, regardless of who it is. They don't have that as an option. And I think Josh, he was trying to wrestle the Japanese match instead of using everything that was available to him. I mean, in Japan, it's all about honor. So if you're in a fist fight with somebody, you don't back down, even if you know you're going to lose. Whereas Josh always has the option of going, no, I'm a coward. I'm just going to hide in the ropes here for a minute and just kind of, you know, let him move away. I know I've been very critical of the likes of Jørn Simmons for doing this, but the way that Jørn does it is he does it forever. I'm just saying, like, in this match, at the point where he realised he'd gone too far, he could have hidden in the ropes. And
yeah,
that's
spot or two would have been okay.
Yeah, not like the whole way through, but just to emphasise the fact that he realised what he'd got himself into and couldn't get out of at that point.
The closing stretch was pretty hyper. Like,
was very good.
I think maybe that wouldn't have been as effective if you knew that, like, Ishii was superior to Bodum. So maybe the lack of heel stuff helped the finish, actually, because Bodum felt like a proper threat. And, like, because Ishii lost to Damo last year, I thought, oh, maybe they'll put Bodum over here again.
He
used the rolling elbow as well, and that looked better than when he used it against Hero. So.
Yeah, it was way better. Way better than against Hero. Connected absolutely perfectly on it. He must have been practicing. So if you probably look back at that Hero match and went, like, damn, I didn't land it. And for this one, yeah, he absolutely nailed it.
Yeah.
It was a very good performance. I'm just saying that, like, I don't feel like the crowd were as invested in it as they should have been. And I think it was because they didn't have that heel face dynamic quite right. Ishii played the face perfect, but I thought Bodum could have done more to be the heel. Not to a degree where he'd have ruined the match, but to make it more heated.
Yeah, that's a fair enough criticism, I would say. But still, tremendous match. Great seeing Ishii.
Yeah, I enjoyed it as a standalone match. It was fine.
Bodum loses nothing in losing her, so Ishii was the right guy to go over, especially since he lost last time.
Well, hopefully he'll be back at some point. That would be...
Well, hope maybe this year, which we'll talk about after we've been through the Summer Sizzler.
Yes, later.
What's going to happen next. Match number three, we had TNA star Moose versus Shaw Samuels.
Well, soon to be What Culture Pro Wrestling star Moose as well.
He's working all the right trendy places.
That sounded like a criticism.
If you take it on face value, it was a compliment.
Yeah, but I'm not. this match, I had very little expectations for, because I'm so used to seeing Shah work heel and do the extreme version of what I was just talking about with Josh Bowden, where he will just cheat and cheat and cheat and cheat and cheat to the point where I don't care anymore. But in this match, he kind of left enough open where Moose could get his stuff in. And I thought Moose did really well in just kind of picking his spots. I thought he timed everything quite well in this as a babyface.
Yeah, I thought Moose bought some good stuff here. His dropkick is obviously amazing. Like, I've heard people say that, oh, it's overrated, it's just because he's big. No, he has a fucking amazing dropkick.
I can't believe how high he got.
Like it makes so much impact as well.
Yeah, he literally just shoves his foot into Charles Samuel's face. Like, he gets up really high and you're thinking, oh, this is going to be like one of these Lance Storm little off the chest or something. No, it's straight in the face. Puts his foot clean through the face. And the one off the top rope. This is the spot that we were still talking about this the next day. Ian was still freaking out. Ian from Scotland, Ian, who's been on the podcast before. He was sat was he right behind you? He was somewhere near you, but I was kind of behind him. And he was legitimately freaked out by Shah Samuels tumbling off the top on that drop kick. And Rob was over the other side, and he was saying that Shah, as he was coming off the top, reached for the rope to kind of slow his fall, missed it, and just splat. At ringside, and from our point of view, we couldn't see where he was landing. It looked absolutely horrific, to the point where I
don't remember
it. Match is over.
Too much, but other reports have said, yeah, it looked bad. But luckily, he emerged unscathed and was up, flinging Moose over his shoulder 5 seconds later.
It was close.
Clearly, it looked worse than it was.
I was sat next to a little child. I must have been about 7-8 years old during this match. It wasn't Alan's nephew. And this kid sat next to me, so I'm like, I can't swear now for the whole show. And as soon as that drop kick landed and Shah fell off top, I was like, oh, shit! And I was like, sorry. This is the problem. They shouldn't let children into these things. Progress, it's perfect. I should only be allowed in shows where I'm allowed to swear.
I thought Shah did a pretty good job of anchoring this match. I said that for this match to be any good, Samuels would have to put in a really good performance, because Moose, while very impressive, still is kind of green.
That's fair.
So Shah was definitely the veteran in this and carried it pretty well.
Yeah, it was solid. I wasn't expecting solid, to be honest with you. When we were previewing this, I was looking at it thinking, oh, I don't really want a lot out of this.
The first few minutes were a bit dull, but it picked up towards the end, definitely.
Yeah, it was a fine match, which is not what I was expecting. Mm-hmm. So good work.
And Moose left an impression, certainly.
Oh god, Moose got over. The dueling,
annoyingly over.
the dueling strikes where it was Moose and East. That was crazy. That was like legitimately like some of the loudest reactions of the entire night. Okay, so now Rob is here. He's arrived from the hellhole that is the M1.
Belatedly, but yes.
So, unfortunately, Rob, you've missed the first three matches. Anything to add that we possibly haven't mentioned?
Well, first up, tag team match. Pretty much a nothing match. Went way too long, like 20 minutes for a match no one really cared about.
We were putting that over.
Well, it over-delivered on expectations, but it wasn't exactly good. What was next?
Bota Mishi.
Yeah, that was really good. Bodum's best match ever. Took a little while to get going, but once it did, yeah, great stuff. Really enjoyed the story of Bodum being the cocky dude bro that he is, thinking he could go toe-to-toe with Ishii and then losing because he was in there against Ishii and he can't go toe-to-toe with Ishii. Yeah, I really like that.
Third was Shah and Moose. So we talked about Shah's ridiculous death bump off the top.
Yeah, that was nasty. See him like grabbing for the rope and completely missing it. As for the match itself, I thought it over-delivered, similarly to the opener. Nothing special, but good, and I wasn't necessarily expecting good. I thought Shah outshined Moose, which what I wasn't necessarily expecting. Some of the stuff Moose did, like kicking out of a pedigree at one for no reason, and randomly no-selling a superplex, that was rubbish, to be honest. Needlessly thrown in there.
Well, you know exactly what that is. It's the I'm not going to work for Triple H, I'm going to TNA kick out.
Yeah, well, that doesn't stop being shit, though, does it?
It's pretty juvenile, but let's face it, these are wrestlers.
But yeah, I thought Shah looked good here. Bestie's looked in quite a while, which, you know, low bar, but still. And set him up nicely to re-establish him as a singles worker.
Okay, so after that we've got the big main event of the first half, the British Cruiserweight Championship match, pitting champion Pete Dunne against challenger Will Ospreay. This was a really good match, wasn't it? I think it's probably the best match on the show.
Yeah, I'd say so. There are one or two bits where it gets perhaps a little too flippity, a little too choreographed, perhaps. And if you are someone who generally doesn't like Will's style because it's too choreographed, you're going to hate this. But I thought Pete Dunne looked tremendous here. For all the flips Will did, you'd get like Pete doing one forearm and knocking him down. He looks so crisp, so vicious.
Yeah, it's proved Pete Dunne is like top tier now, and he's ready to be in Bola and be recognised as one of Britain's best. And like you say, he was probably better than Ospreay here, even though Ospreay was really good. Like, Dunne delivered and made this match even better than just another Ospreay match, which is always really good.
I was impressed that Ospreay managed to bust out a sequence that I've never seen before. He seems to manage to do that on a frightening, consistent manner. I can't even remember the sequence of it, but it was basically a series of flips, and basically Pete Dunne was rolling out of the way of the pinfalls, and he just kept flipping until he hit him. But I haven't seen the on-demand, so I really can't remember the details of it. I just remember sitting there going like, oh, yes!
There was a Shooting Star Press and a Phoenix Splash in there somewhere. But yeah, I can't remember the whole sequence. But yeah, that sequence, I loved it. But if you are one of the people who hates these overly choreographed matches, that's going to be a nightmare for you.
But the thing is, it wasn't, though, because like, he was going for these ridiculous moves. Pete Dunne was seeing them all coming and moving out of the way so he wasn't hit. And then eventually Ospreay did something like that he wasn't expecting and he got caught. So I thought it was really well done. It was like the brains of Pete Dunne against the flippityness of William Ospreay.
And we found out nothing can overcome the sheer magnitude of flips of young Will.
It's flips with a Z.
Probably two Zs.
Yeah. He had no chance.
It almost kind of feels boring to say that Ospreay was really good again.
Oh, he's too good, isn't he? He makes it look too easy. Who was it who was really upset that he made it look too easy? Because we spoke to a lot of people that weekend, but somebody was going, oh, he makes it look too easy. It was Senor Lariato. When we were talking to him at ringside, he goes, he makes it look too easy, the bastard. Beautiful stuff.
Yeah, I think we'll look back on this and be like, oh, this might have been Pete Dunne's breakout match in terms of being like an elite indie guy. Because he's never really had that great match to define him.
He's kind of bubbling under and has been for a long time, probably about a year. He's been just ready to hit that next level, but this was like easily a 4-star match. Mm. Well, maybe not on Rob's scale, but
pretty cool.
That is pretty high, to be fair, for you, at 3¾. So, but the thing that surprised me was Ospreay won. I kind of pitched that before the show, but with other things in mind, like the uncertainty of the heavyweight championship. But none of that came to pass, so it's kind of weird that they switched the belt to Will.
Well, you've got Will main eventing the Uprising show, which is, well, that's only a month away now. So do you want him going into that big main event with a loss?
He's going to be representing Cruiserweight Wrestling.
Indeed.
So he is Cruiserweight champ.
And then also we had that that speech afterwards, which wouldn't have worked as well
if he'd lost.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I'll be interested to see where they go with Pete from here, because it almost felt like it wasn't necessarily the right time for him to lose the belt here, more than it was the right time for Ospreay to win it. But I hope they keep Pete in a big featured spot, because he deserves it, especially with this performance. Who's he going up against at Uprising? They've announced that match, haven't they?
Ricochet.
Ah, yes, Ricochet. Yeah, well, that's a great start, isn't it? Big match for him. Similar.
I could see him and Damian coming up for the tag straps on a show. Seeing as they work in the tag division, it'd be something for him to do just to, you know, kill time until they're ready for like another big chance. You can use that, Riv Pro. Yeah, he's had a six-month run with the belt. That's a pretty solid run. He's had a good few title defenses on there and looked solid as champion.
Post-match, wherever Ospreay goes in 2016, controversy follows, and we have a fair few things to break down. From one, his post-match promo, which was very rambly, and some people are saying like he showed immaturity there.
He is immature.
Yeah. Does anyone have any strong opinions on the post-match promo? And just how rambling it was.
Well, my biggest takeaway from this was I really thought that Will's improved his delivery on the promos. I think this was a really good example of that, even if I didn't like the content. Because I was never really going to like the content, because, he's talking about a match that I don't care about in the Vader match. And then also calling out fans, obviously. That could be avoided. But it's clear he's made strides and big improvements on an area that he was traditionally bad at in promo delivery. Now he just needs to nail the content, which has been very lacking recently. But really, with that crowd, he can kind of do no wrong.
I cheered him on to boost his confidence. You can see he was really trying hard at that. It's like the content wasn't quite right, but it'll come. He's improved a lot. He's getting really confident on the stick, and I quite enjoyed the promo, even though what he was saying was possibly not right. Although that guy in the crowd that he cut the promo on, whose name I believe is Daniel, he fucking deserved it.
Well, I mean, this guy always goes around and like throws the middle fingers up at Ospreay and like fans who cheer Ospreay and like cut Ospreay's picture out of like flyers near him. So I'm not gonna disagree with Arn. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a real dick. Just doing stuff like publicly wishing injuries on him and stuff. I mean, like, you can not like a guy, but that's crossing the line a bit. wishing someone to get hurt, lose their livelihood. And obviously it would be better, and hopefully this would be something Ospreay learned with time, to just, you know, ignore that and be able to blot it out. But obviously that's easier said than done. If someone's wishing injuries on you, I'm sure it's very tempting to fire back.
Yeah.
Well, he was in a ring with a live microphone, so you know he pretty much can say whatever he wants.
Watching back on VOD, you can see Andy Quilden, the owner of RevPro, while Ospreay is calling out this fan, and he's just like stood there shaking his head, going, "Come on, man! I told you to build up the match. What are you doing? This isn't right."
Moving on to the fifth match of the show. What was the fifth match of the show?
Skull and Bailey.
We have, Marty Skull versus Mike Bailey. Had it on cage match, but it wasn't up on the screen. This match I thought over-delivered in terms of what I was expecting of it. I was expecting a good match, obviously, between these two guys, but I thought, particularly down the stretch, this got really heated.
Some of the stretches that Marty came up with, the one where he bent Bailey's fingers all the way backwards.
Yeah. Amazing.
Oh my God, that was disgusting.
Because like I've sort really of gotten disillusioned with the whole Marty clicking fingers spot, because like, you sort of get it by now. I'm like, once you've seen it once, you've kind of... But Mike Bailey must have like triple jointed fingers, because these were going all the way back, like he was touching
his fingernails were touching the back of his hand. It was I'm trying to do it to myself now, and like I can't even get like perpendicular. It's like sickening stuff. And he did the finger snap thing on his toe as well, which I thought was fantastic.
I'm double jointed and I can like barely get it past perpendicular, so yeah, Bailey must be crazy flexible or have very broken fingers now.
I don't know if he's dislocated his fingers at some point so he can just kind of pop them out. And like as soon as he was booked against Skull, he's probably gone up to Marty and go, "You want to do a really fun spot with the fingers here?" But yeah, absolutely sickening.
Oh, definitely, definitely. The match as a whole, I enjoyed it a lot more live than I did watching back on video, because like you notice more things, I find, when you're watching back on tape. And the biggest fault here was they spent like the initial 5 minutes or so working around Bailey's foot, and then that never really went anywhere. It's disappointing.
I did enjoy Marty's mockery of Bailey's martial arts stuff as well. You weren't here, Rob, but earlier on I was talking about how I felt Bodum should have been more of a heel in his match. This is the kind of thing that he could have done. The level of mockery that Skull brought there was perfect for a heel. Instead of like taking what Bailey brought into the ring at face value, he's just looked at him and gone, "Fuck off, mate! I'm not going to put up with that shit. I'm important here. You're not." And he starts, doing all manner of like kung fu pose, like the Karate Kid crane kick 1 foot thing. I think he did that beautifully well. Skull at the moment is so good as a heel. It pisses me off when people cheer for him because he's such a good heel.
See, I think he's almost better as a tweener. Like, I feel like his progress run has been marred by the bullshit finishes and like inability to like make him look strong. He always has to cheat. Like, that's him in like total heel mode. But here in RevPro, he's kind of a tweener. Like, he's healing it up, but in kind of a lighthearted way. He's better at that, I think, because it allows him to just wrestle and have better matches. Whereas
true,
I think when he's in full heel mode, he just becomes a WWE, can't get a clean win to save his life.
I do like Marty just being Marty, and in this match that's pure Skull. Another match of his that I've seen this week that I really liked was the Trent Seven one from the Live at the Cockpit 8 taping. I know Rob wasn't as keen on it as I was, because I saw him tweet about it, but I thought that was a great match. I thought they did fantastic work in establishing Trent Seven as like a guy for Red Pro. I thought it came across really well. I thought it was a solid match.
I enjoyed it a lot too, you know. I just didn't think it was the match of the year contender. Some people were talking up. But yeah, very good introduction.
Oh, no, it's not that high at all. But like in terms of like introducing a guy to an audience, it did fantastic work. It made Trent Seven look like a star, like immediately. When we saw him in progress at the 5,000 to 1 show, he looked good in that match with Rampage Brown. But the one against Marty Scurll, he immediately looked like a star. And there's a big difference between those two things. I really hope they'll use him again, Rare Prime, and I'm sure they will.
Well, they've already been using him regularly on Cockpit shows since that one. I think he went up against Haskins recently.
Also, Mustache Mountain Tag Championship Challenge. That's another one for Redman and Garrett. They're just lining up.
Well, lining up in your head, at least.
In my head, they're lining up. There's loads of challenges.
Speaking of Trent Seven, I hope they do something with him. Because, amazingly, he's 34. Like, he doesn't look it, but he doesn't have that long left to really make a run. But he's put himself in the right places and made an impact in Progress and Rev Pro. So I really hope either one of them or both of them do use him going forward.
I would hope, but the reaction to him in both has been terrific, and he's ready, he's primed. And he's got a tag team lined up. It's like you can use him however you want to use him.
Yeah.
And if it means more bookings for Tyler Bate, that's even better.
So we can probably move on to the sixth match, which was Big Damo versus Matt Sydal. And this one took a long time to get going, but down the stretch, I think it really worked.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I think people were starting to struggle at that point. If you've never been in York Hall, it's just, in the summertime, it's like stepping into an oven. And I was just sitting there trying to move as little as possible, and I was the sweat pouring off my forehead. And I turn around, look up into the balcony seats, and there's old Alan 4L with his Japanese fan gimmick just sitting there like like fanning himself in the up on the balcony. I need to get one of those. I think it's required for summertime.
This match was really weirdly structured. You'd kind of think that Damo would throw around the smaller Sydal. I mean, that's what we all said in the preview that we were looking forward to. But that really never really happened. If anything, Sydal dominated the match. It was really weird. He took at least 60% of the offense, and then it was far more technical than I was expecting as well. Took it to the ground a lot, which was weird. Another disappointing showing for Damo.
I thought it was a very good showing from Sydal, though, in terms of like modifying what he did to suit his opponent. Whereas Damo, again, I was a little bit disappointed. It's kind of weird. I think the best work I've seen from Damo this year is in What Culture, which is really weird. And you haven't seen it yet, but it'll be on like later shows.
Yeah, I thought when Damo was like chucking Sydal around and like using his weight properly, like that was when the match was at its best. It just didn't happen very much.
Yeah, I think we're done with this one already.
Yeah, Sydal winning means that he could potentially be lined up for a rematch with Ospreay from their excellent match last year.
I'm thinking perhaps this was setting up a potential three-way with Ospreay and Dunn for the Cruiserweight title that was set up earlier in the year.
Yeah, they teased it, didn't they, and then switched.
Yeah, it was most on some of the smaller shows.
Post-match, we had Damo. It looked like he was going to do like a tearful goodbye almost because he kind of thanked the fans and everything. Obviously, he's going to have at least one more match in Rev Pro. And while he was thanking the fans, out comes Shar Samuels, the fat Cantona lookalike, to attack him from behind. He's just a shit Danny Dyer.
You'd imagine this would be setting up Damo's last York Hall match with Rev Pro. At Uprising, probably.
Slightly underwhelming.
It'll be good for Shar.
It will be good for Shar.
He'll get the rub. Or is that just the main event for the British Heavyweight Championship? Zack Sabre Jr. defending against Katsuyori Shibata, and the crowd was hyped, to say the least, to see Shibata in person.
Majorly hyped to see him. I'm not even sure how good the match was, to be honest with you. I have no idea, because I sat there through that Damo Seidel match sweating all over the place. And then as soon as Shibata walked out, I was like, oh, it's on. And I was watching him as he came out. I watched him when he was in the ring. And then I saw him watch Sabre as Sabre came out. And like the intensity of this man is just, it's fantastic. His presence in the ring is very close to the best I've ever seen in person. Mm-hmm. For me, his the way he gets his personality across just by standing there is better than just about anyone else in the world.
Yeah, he's that good.
He really is.
I noticed that he did a little bow as well, both before and after the match, which he doesn't do in Japan. So clearly he was very happy to be here and like soaking in the appreciation of the fans. Yeah, like going up to him and meeting him on the merch section, like he's got this massive smile on his face. he's so happy to see everyone.
I spoke to one of you, I can't remember who it was, but like while I was watching him over there, I was going like, it looks like in I think it's Terminator 2 when they teach Arnold Schwarzenegger's Terminator character how to smile. It looked like that. He got this grin on his face, like he's forcing it. But it looked like he enjoyed himself. I'm really happy for him.
Oh yeah. Also, after the match, he like climbed over the seats, like
that was beautiful.
Just walking on the seats towards the merch section. Which was hilarious and just something you never thought you'd see. And then Ishii's just standing there watching him doing it. It's like, yeah, it's pretty awesome just to see the New Japan guys, and I'm excited for when they come over again.
Yeah, there's a lot of very talented guys in New Japan, but Shibata is something special. And I've seen him many times, and I've always like really appreciated the way that he behaves when he's in the ring. But it didn't come across that well on tape compared to in person. Like in person, seeing him the way that he is at all times, he struck me as like the most consummate professional wrestler I've ever seen. And that includes an awful lot of people.
As for the match itself, I thought this was a very good match that could have been great if it had gone a bit longer and was allowed to have like a non-decisive finish, because it was a clean finish. Sabre Jr. pinned New Japan star Katsuyori Shibata clean in the ring, which was very interesting to say the least. But it wasn't like, Sabre completely outclassed him. He just snuck the technical pin in there.
I do think Shibata isn't winning G1 this year.
Yeah. But everyone filling in their pick-ems, maybe take that into account when you're considering who's winning that B block.
Yeah. But at some point, he's going to be a big deal for New Japan, and it was great to see him in person.
It was great to see him, but the match wasn't particularly good.
Oh,
I thought I would disagree with that, Rob. I thought the match was solid.
I would
solid.
Disagree with that as well.
Well, you're both wrong. It started off really well. I really liked the struggle towards the beginning to take an advantage. But after that, it just really meandered. They transitioned well from the grappling into the striking, but after that, it just wasn't that good. It was kind of just a nothing meandery match until the finish, which just kind of happened. The crowd went, oh, and then it was over. Completely skippable.
Ooh. I think it would be worth checking out. I would say that at least. This isn't a skippable match. Even if it's not.
Like a 3.25-star match.
Rob is really grumpy, by the way. This is traffic jam, Rob.
It was a 3.25-star match. Like, if anyone else had had this match that weren't called Zack Sabre Jr. and Katsuyori Shibata, no one would care.
That's a fair comment, but I don't agree with it.
No, I enjoyed I enjoyed 2/3 of the match. I get where you're coming from. I thought the start was very good. I thought the striking in the middle was probably the best part of the match. It could have done with having like a big back and forth towards the end just to kind of like cement what they were going for. And I think the ending was a bit abrupt and that kind of took away from what they'd done beforehand. But it's two-thirds of a very good match. It's just, you kind of lose that final third. Yeah. I see where you're coming from, Rob, but I think you're being harsh.
It was like the fourth best match in the show. There were good parts, and I think overall Shibata had a fairly good performance, but overall, like, it wasn't even close to being a great match.
Yeah, I thought the ending was a bit lackluster, and like it lacked that final exchange that really would have put it over the top. But I thought there was a lot of energy in this match. Both guys were like being very physical and like really bringing their best to the situation. The crowd was really hyped up.
Were they though?
That's what I want to see in good pro wrestling, is just lots of effort. The crowd were really, really into it. I guess you could say that it was helped by the fact that, you know, it's two big stars having a dream match, and like if it had just been some other random people, it wouldn't have been as good. But sometimes the situation does make the match.
We were talking about the that NXT match earlier, the Nakamura and Balor. That was assisted by the crowd. It's like a lot of what they did wasn't great, but the crowd were completely into it. So that kind of, it kind of coasted by on the atmosphere where it wasn't succeeding in terms of storytelling. And I think that is the same where the shortfalls came with this match with Sabre and Shibata. It's like where it kind of dipped down below like the standard that they, their standards are both very high, but when it kind of dipped below that, I think it got by on the atmosphere in the building. I don't know what it comes across like on tape, but like live, it felt important. It felt special.
Well, I really didn't get that impression live. The crowd was really good for the introductions, but then then right at the start of the match, they were really good, but then they didn't do enough in ring to keep them fired up and into the match, and that translated a lot to tape. It didn't come across with that lot of crowd on tape either. And maybe part of that is the heat in the building. Everyone was kind of heat exhausted, but...
It's hotter than hell.
I think a better match would have had the crowd more into it, and the crowd wasn't actually that into it. You get the impression from the intros that they're going to be really into it, and then they're just not.
It's because that might just been in my head that I was really excited, so... The atmosphere might have just been like my own personal atmosphere, and I was really enjoying it because of that. But yeah, I thought it was probably the second best match on the show after Ospreay and Dunn. That may not line up with other people, but I think that's pretty close.
There was a spot where Shibata did his like running kick into the corner with like he's like dragging the guy with him, and then he kicks it him in the corner in the head. And, like, when he landed that, it was almost like my life flashed before my eyes to that very moment where I was watching Shibata hit a kick into the corner on Sabre Jr. Like, that felt... It was a really good-looking move, and just, like, the fact it was happening, like, 5 meters away from me was really, really awesome. So I would say, yeah, just the moment, the energy, having Shibata there... brought through this match to be really good and really memorable. And I'd say people should give it a go. Definitely not just skip over it out of hand. At least give it a go and see what you think.
Well, so I'd say the first two thirds of it are really strong. It's only really let down by the final third. But if it had like a really like a gangbusters final third, it could have been pushing up towards match of the year, I think.
I don't know what match you or what guys are watching, but I've seen 500 better matches than that already this year. But moving on from the match itself, what are your guys' general feels for Sabre's matches that he's had since he's become the British champion? I'll let you guys launch into your thoughts first, but so far he's had matches with Styles, Elgin, Damo, Angle, and now Shibata, which, you know, pretty star lineup of guys that he's faced. Has he delivered? Question mark?
I get the feeling you're about to bury him here, but I've basically enjoyed all the matches apart from the one with Damo. The one with Damo, I enjoyed the storyline behind it because that was the one where Skrull kind of came down and interfered in the middle. I say the middle, it was like two moves before the end. I didn't really like that match at all, but then a lot of the Damo matches I've seen recently I've not enjoyed for various reasons. The rest of his run, I think he's been pretty strong. I liked the AJ match more than you did, where he won the belt. I thought that was a really good match. And in general, I think he's been pretty good. I don't think he's had as good a run with the belt as I thought he was going to have. But that's more on the booking and the opponents that he's been given. Certainly the Shibata match should have been like a, should have been a world beater, and it wasn't. And I can see where you're coming from in terms of being disappointed with that. But it was, like I say, it's two thirds of a good match.
I thought Shibata was probably his best match here. So it's a divisive one, and certainly wasn't as good as it could have been. But I enjoyed it. The angle match was what it was, but it was still enjoyable and like a spectacle fight.
Well, they kept it short. Like for what Kurt Angle is nowadays, that was as good as you're going to get, really.
That was as good as you were going to get with Angle. The Damo was a nothing match, and I haven't seen the Elgin one, and the Styles match was certainly underwhelming. So I can see what you're about to say and kind of agree with it.
Shoot from the hip then, Rob.
Well, first of all, you just... you did just say maybe it's on the opponents he's had. He's had Shibata, Elgin, Styles, and Damo. They're some of the best opponents you can have in the world. But to go on to the point I was originally going to make, with those five guys, if you'd have laid them out before the title reign, I would have been shocked to find out that his most satisfying and his best singles match that he's had as champion has been with Kurt Angle in 2016. But really, that was the only really satisfying match out of the five that he had. Like, the Damo match was fine as a story piece, but as a match itself wasn't that good. The Elgin match started really well and then got really excessive and kind of killed itself and wasn't that good in the end. Styles match, super underwhelming. Shibata match, super underwhelming. Strangely, it was the Kurt Angle match with the opponent who's super limited that was the one that felt the most satisfying. And the only one that wasn't underwhelming. Crazy.
Well, the Osprey match was this year, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was about to say.
Oh, damn.
RevPro TV against Osprey.
Well, that's completely blown my argument out of the water, because that was my favourite match of the year. When was that match? Because I've got all these title matches up here and it's not listed.
I'm not sure, because the taping is weird. So I don't know if it was taped before and then it came out after, or...
I think his first appearance back was to win the title. I don't think he... That was his first match back for like a year. So, yeah, it must have been.
Ah, right. Yeah, found it. It was... his first match in RevPro after winning the title, you're right. I had all the title matches listed, and then I was adding the Kurt Angle one, so that was non-title. But this match was non-title as well, apparently, just after Ospreay had lost his match against Skrull. Well, that's kind of completely killed my argument then, because, I loved that match. That was like 4.25. And I rarely go 4.25. It's like fifth best match of the year, I think. Maybe I could slightly twist that argument into being hasn't been performing in the big spots, but yeah. Who's he facing at Rising? It's been announced, hasn't it?
Jeff Cobb.
Ah, right. Well, that, I've got a feeling that might be another disappointing, underwhelming one. I like Cobb.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. Have either of you guys seen the, recent PWG show where he had the match with Chris Hero?
No, I don't get to see a lot of PWG on account of how they're like far behind they are. Because I think about ordering a DVD and then it's like, yeah, but I'm going to get it in like 4 months, so I'll just watch something else.
Yeah, well, that Hero match looks so, so good in the preview. And then when you watch the match itself, it just wasn't that great. It was... Cobb's really good at doing the big moves, and as long as his matches are kept short, they're generally really impressive. But when he's going for a longer match, they generally lack the flow that you want in a great match, and I feel like this could be another occasion where that happens.
This booking with Cobb, it seems completely out of left field to me. Because we were looking at like where the title situation is going, and this does nothing to clear that up at all. So I really don't know what's going on in Andy Quilden's head. I don't know if this is some kind of master plan that's going to unravel before our very eyes during Uprising, and all of a sudden all will become clear. But I'm just not seeing it at the moment. I don't know what's going on.
It's very interesting. We've kind of been thinking it's almost a guarantee that Zach's going soon for ages now. And it's still kind of up in the air. Will he be turning up for Global Wars, which is, you know, we assume is going to happen around October time? Because you'd think that would be where he'd have a chance to drop the belt. Will he still be around then? Who knows, I guess. Who knows? I'm not sure if you guys mentioned before, because obviously I wasn't there for the beginning of this episode, but Global Wars UK is going to be happening later this year, as I called, a little pat on myself on the back. Last year it was bundled together in a weekender with Uprising. This year Uprising is a lot earlier. So Global Wars UK is going to be taking over that spot where Uprising is. We're not actually sure where the event is, but we presume it's going to be Wheel Call. Probably in about October.
I think it just said coming soon. It didn't say where.
Yeah, we were actually, it's when we were standing talking to someone and we were looking over at someone's program and it was like, Global Wars? God damn it, Rob was right.
So yeah, getting back to our original point, obviously Sabre Juniors in the Cruiserweight Classic, one of the favourites to win the whole thing. Will he still be around by the time Global Wars comes round? And if not, how are they getting the title off him? Because you'd think it's not dropping to Jeff Cobb. Mm.
Well, I'll go on a recorded record, if that makes any sense, and say that Dar's going to beat Sabre Junior in Cruiserweight Classic quarterfinal. So if I'm wrong, you can shame me. If I'm right,
what if it's Ho Ho Lun?
If it's Ho Ho Lun, none of us have any hope.
No Ho Ho hope at all. Yeah, he's been the least impressive of the guys we've seen so far.
Yeah, I'd seen him before actually, Ho Ho Lun, and I was like, they're really taking this guy over for like a 32 man tournament because like he's not very good.
He was over in the UK for a bit, wasn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. I saw him once. I can't remember where it was, but I've seen him once, and it was in a gym or something, and he wasn't very good.
Might have been great there. He definitely worked great there promotions at one point.
I'm excited to see Dar and Sabre Jr. in that environment, and Gallagher.
You know what? I hope Jack wins. I hope he wins the whole thing. I'll love me some Gallagher.
It would be out of left field, certainly.
It would be. But let's face it, my predictions are terrible. So if I'm going to go with Gallagher, then that'll be...
I think Dar has the second best shot of winning the whole thing.
I'd be surprised.
Behind Ibushi.
I know he's signed, but I would still be surprised.
Yeah, I don't see that at all.
I think... they like his dual nationality. Signed. He's got it all.
They hate foreign people, and he's double foreign.
I'm kind of thinking that Gargano might win it now, but yeah, we're off into like a different territory again there. So
right, so we'll loop back to Summer Sizzler and talk overall show thoughts. I've probably come across far more grumpy than I intended. Because I did really enjoy this show. It's a super easy watch. There's nothing actively bad. The opener's not great. Well, it's not good either, but it's fine. It's an easy watch, even if it goes too long. I came across real grumpy on the main event, I'm sure. But I thought it was a good match, just really underwhelming. And overall, it was just such a easy watch. Really fun throughout. And almost better than the show itself was... how damn good, like, the experience of going was. Because it was, like, a huge gathering of everyone from Eurograps Twitter. It was a great occasion, almost more than a great show.
For this one, I think that was especially true. I've never seen so many people that basically, if you took a photo of the crowd, you could kind of superimpose Twitter handles over everyone that was in it. I have never seen so many people like off Twitter in a building. Like Eurograps Twitter took over your call. There were I'd say like 60% of the crowd were like off my timeline. It was that ridiculous. I kept turning around and seeing somebody else and going like, oh, that's there's Alan Boone over there, and oh, there's Alan 4L up in the stands. There's Strigger. There's Morton VH. It's like everywhere around me there was Double Dans and Ian's and Jules. There's people everywhere. It was great. That was the high point of the weekend for me. It's like it was a good night of wrestling, but it was a terrific weekend of just hanging around with people who love professional wrestling. It really was.
Yeah,
a gathering. I would shout agree. Out to absolutely everyone that I bumped into over the weekend.
We'd give shout outs to everyone we'd seen, but there's simply too many people. Like, it would take too long.
Yeah, that's right. Especially the Saturday night crew, though, that turned up early. We went for food at the diner. So that'd be Strigger, Morton, Jules, Ian from Scotland, and the other guy who's into Heat Up. I can't remember his name.
I forget his actual name, but it's @StatOK.
That's the guy, yeah. Nice fella. Really likes Heat Up.
Really into Heat Up.
Yeah.
I guess someone has to be.
Well, you made me watch a Heat Up match. Like I got back and I was like, I want to watch some Heat Up.
Any good?
Like Tamura and Watanabe. Yeah, they're really good. Tamura's really strong. He's a tiny guy, but he's like they packaged dynamite and then put muscle around the outside of it. That's what he's like.
I've liked what I've seen of him in All Japan. Maybe I will have to check out some Heat Up.
We had a lovely evening's meal on the Saturday discussing exotic professional grappling. I was with my people.
Come to York Hall and meet people.
Yeah, that's the best bit. Yeah, you put it perfectly there. You get to be with your people. And that's so rare for our level of wrestling nerddom. It's lovely.
Actually, I go from day to day and I can't have conversations with people. I end up talking about the weather and politics and stuff because, like, nobody else that I know. There's one guy at work who watches wrestling, and at the moment he's got the Scott Hall DVD, so, like, he's just doing Scott Hall impressions every day. And that's nice, but it's not as expansive as, like, you know, sitting on a table with five other people and just talking about Japan.
It's no Heat Up.
It's not a Heat Up. What is?
Moving on from Summer Sizzler, then. Coming up at the end of this month, I think it's July 27th, something around there, Progress is having Chapter 33. Now, usually we'd be talking about this next episode, but next episode we've got something special in line, which I'll be talking about later this episode, so we won't be doing have a chance to preview this, so we're previewing it now. Not the full cards announced, but most of it is. Most of the big stuff.
I went to buy tickets for this show, and then realised I was at work, and I was like, I can't. And because the sale happened like the week before I got my schedule, and I thought, I'm definitely working that day, I can't go. And then the schedule came out, and I'm not working. But at the same time, it does drop into the middle of a ridiculous schedule that I've got in terms of reviews. What with the G1 and the Super J Cup, and all the weekly TVs and stuff that I do, I've got about 40 shows to do in the next 4 weeks. It's ridiculous. And in that is a Progress show and Rev Pro and then another Progress show.
Indeed. This show being called Malice in Wonderland, which is a great title.
Great title. Best title ever.
Oof, that's quite the call. They've had some very good ones. Chat Shit, Get Banged, definitely up there. But Malice in Wonderland there too.
Glory follows virtue as if it were a shadow.
Nah, too serious.
I personally think this is the best title they've come up with, is Malice in Wonderland. It's great stuff. So what's on this show? You've got William Eever defending the title against Marty Skrull in a rematch from the impromptu main event of the last chapter, which I missed because I had to get to train.
This one is not particularly interesting because you know it's going to be bullshitty finish because they're not going to give either guy a clean loss. So it's just, I'm waiting for them to get back to doing proper matches, you know, and not all this pantomime stuff at the end of the main event because they don't want to give away a clean win. Either could lose clean, but it's...
I think I'm a bit more positive on this one to you, Ollie.
That's a change.
I'm a bit more hopeful we could get clean finish.
I'm not holding my breath.
And then you're grumpy.
I think after this one, it'll get better. But you just have to get through this one. And then I think the clean finishes will start up again as we lead up to Brixton.
We've already talked on previous episode quite a lot about the cash-in by Eever on Skrull.
We've done that, yeah.
But I guess you could always go down the arrogance road for that one. But yeah, getting back to the point, just because it's always been a Money in the Bank style cash in, that doesn't stop that being shit.
Yeah.
Money in the Bank sucks.
Well, they are a punk rock wrestling. So.
But while I'm not necessarily expecting a clean match, I feel like there's more of a chance of it than you are. And I'm looking forward to seeing Eever in the main event, a chance to prove himself.
I'm looking forward to see Eever in the main event. I just think the finish is going to be screwy in some way, and it's going to be unsatisfying. The first half main events of Progress this year have been generally a lot better than the main events, because they haven't been finishing cleanly.
For me, I generally rather see main events almost always be clean. But if you are going to have screwy finishes to main events, it should be to build to a clean finish the next time and make that feel even more satisfying. But what they have been doing is having screwy main event after screwy main event, and there's never been any payoff, which it sucked. Perhaps the most disappointing bit has been that because I really like Eever, and I think we all do here, is that his big moment has been kind of overshadowed somewhat by all the bullshit. And hopefully he'll have a chance to really go out here and impress, because it's a big spot for him, especially if it ends up being clean. Because to this point, he's kind of felt a little bit like an undeserving main eventer, and he needs to go out here, have a great match, and show everyone that he very much belongs in the main event scene. I think he's got it in him.
Yeah, it's a really big test for him. I think he has the goods to deliver a good match. I would say there's an 80% chance that there's some sort of screwy finish.
Shenanigans.
There will be shenanigans, no doubt. And it just kind of kills my interest in the match a bit. Not that I don't like shenanigans, I just, I'm tired of them at this point, because I think there's only been 3 clean main events, or clean title main events, this year in Progress. It's just, like, they had 3 Tommy End matches, 2 of them main events, and they both finished in a screwy way.
Yeah, I mean, I like booking as much as anyone, but I think one of the appeals of Britwrest is more often than not you will get like a decisive finish. That's what Rev Pro had. They had a clean pinfall finish. That's what they had when AJ left, is a clean finish.
Like Shibata just lost clean.
Yeah. But you look at Progress, and this year they've had a lot of very screwy finishes.
I don't want Progress to be all Japan or anything. I just would like some sort of feeling that there's going to be a clean finish and not a bullshit one. I feel like I've almost been conditioned to just, like, especially with Skrull as champion, just for there to be silliness at the end of the show.
When there's bullshit involved in every main event, then it stops having the same impact. And I think that's happened in Progress. It's very much lost its impact.
A big statement here would just have Eva go over clean. It's probably not going to happen, though. But that would be like a big statement that would completely put egg on my face if that were to happen.
I think we've almost come to the conclusion fairly naturally that Eva kind of needs a clean win here. He can't afford to just have another, even if it's a screwy win, because he needs like a level of validation that he, so that he'll feel like he belongs in the main event scene. Because at the moment he doesn't, and that sucks. Because he should, because he's great. But a big clean win over Skrull would change that.
What boggles the mind is that they treated Eva like WWE treat their Money in the Bank winners. It's like he didn't get any kind of traction after he won the...
Got pinned by Elbat Jr.
Yeah, he got beaten by the Dazzler team. He got beaten clean by Mikey Whiplash. And then he wins the title. It's like he went from losing to not even like big talents in terms of Progress to winning the title. It's the same as like Sheamus when they had him like as this mid-card nobody. He even lost the night that he cashed in and won against Reigns. That's what they've done, basically. They've treated Eva badly since he won the title shot and then just put the belt on him, which seems weird to me.
Which way do you see it going on?
Some kind of screw job.
In which direction, though?
I don't know. There's definitely something screwy happening. I kind of see it staying on Eva, to be honest. I think Skrull's run is kind of done, but I don't know who he's going to go up against next. Keep in mind that every prediction I make, it goes wrong. Not like Ian wrong, but like wrong.
Moving on then, maybe the fourth biggest match of the night, which is kind of shocking considering how good it could be. Two of the most championist wrestlers in Progress, both former Progress champions and Progress tag champions, are facing off. Mark Andrews versus El Ligero. Should be good.
Well, that'll be good.
Yeah. I think you're burying the lead here, though, and that would be Will Ospreay versus Mark Haskins, which is a rematch of possibly their best match ever in Progress. So that is the one that I'm really hyped for, and the one that kind of sells the show, is that rematch, and both of them are even better than they were last year. So that should be incredible. And that's 100% going to be clean. So
you see, I was saving that till last. Save the best till last. But, you know, you were blowing your load earlier.
Oh, okay. But I was too hyped to talk about this one.
All right, so Ligero and Andrews, two very strong workers going against each other. It's going to be a very good match. I'm not really bothered who wins, but it's going to be great. But then this Ospreay-Haskins match, very hyped. Very, very hyped. That could even go on last, to be honest. It really could, because what else is going to beat that?
Well, the only problem with that is you're then feeding the unworthy main eventer in Eva stip or feel even more, which is not particularly what you want. But yeah, this match should be amazing. Their first encounter was really good, even if they did get a tad excessive. Both guys are even better now, and it's probably not going to be a main event, so perhaps they avoid some of the excessivity, and it's great.
That match was really good. 4L went 5 stars on that.
And I went 4, which in many ways is about the same.
Virtual 5 stars. Yeah, I thought it was very strong. Very strong match. I've been begging for him to put it on again, and it's happening. So it's great.
This is a number one contenders match, so who do we think's winning?
I want Haskins.
Yeah, me too. Up until recently, we could have said he has to win here because he really needs that big win. But he kind of got that on the last show.
Yeah, but look at the reaction to it. This is how much he is loved. Let me take you back to 2001. WWF, as it was at the time, the invasion angle. They had Kurt Angle beat Booker T for the WCW title. Like at some kind of weird point in the middle of the angle. And the reasoning for that, apparently at the time, was to see whether the crowd would respond to like a big championship win for him. And they did. Mm-hmm. And then he won the WWF title, like the big one, against Steve Austin like a month later, maybe 6 weeks later. That's kind of what I think they're doing here. They've kind of tested the waters with the Smash Wrestling title. And I'm sure Mark Haskins will go on to do good things with that. But like, in terms of testing the waters with the crowd to see will they respond to Haskins winning against like a big opponent, they totally went for it. So I think Haskins wins. But yeah, that kind of has me questioning the whole Eva Skrull thing.
Here's the way I'm looking at it. You've got potentially four matchups with the championship match and then this number one contenders match. If Haskins wins, you're getting either Eva versus Haskins, which is a fresh match that I think stylistically would be really good. So I'd be all for that. Or you're getting Skrull versus Haskins, which has kind of already been built up a little. They had their championship match half a year ago now. Skrull won, and then there was kind of a little bit of afters. Skrull attacked him after the match, and then his wife came into the ring to basically there's a feud there. There's an inbuilt feud. So Haskins wins. Either scenario, it works out well. If Will wins, then you're either getting Ospreay versus Eva, which is a fresh match again, but I don't think stylistically would be quite as good as Haskins either, but still good. Or you're getting Skrull Ospreay, which we've seen, five times already this year, and while they've been good every time, it's already happened twice in progress for the title, three times if you're counting the end of the Thunderbastard match. Do you want a fourth? Probably not. So I think either way that they go in the title match, Haskins is probably the better person to win this number one contenders match.
Would the event that the match that they're building to from these two matches, would that be the Brixton main event or not? Because they had done it. They have a Manchester show, I think, in between. Oh, sorry, they've got two. They've got 34 and 35. They've got one. One on August the 14th and one on August 28th. And then Brixton is towards the end of September 25th. So I guess nothing is set in stone yet.
See, the thing is, they've kind of been hyping the big Ospreay in Manchester. So I wouldn't be shocked to see him get a title shot there. And if he's getting a title shot there, you'd think it would be because he won this number one contenders match. So that's kind of the only proviso I'm thinking.
I think the end game is that Haskins is going to win the belt. How they get there, I don't know.
I've got a theory in my head that's just popped up. Arn, it was you that thought Haskins was scheduled to win the Super Strong Style until he was injured, right?
Yes.
Right, so bear with me because I'm kind of making this up as I go along. If Haskins was originally set to win the Super Strong Style 16 tournament, but then obviously didn't because he was ill on the day, then perhaps Haskins was going to win that tournament and not cash in the big Super Strong Style tournament shot until Brixton, the big show. Which would make sense. You have your big two-day tournament and the winner gets the shot at your biggest show of the year. In a kind of Royal Rumble sort of thing. However, he did get ill, so they had to go with something temporary. So they brought up, first, Tommy End, who won the Super Strong Style tournament, and they had to kind of rush that whole program, and that's why it all felt very rushed and very unsatisfying. And then they followed that up by, because they needed to stall some more time before they could put Haskins in the right position to then go on to be set to main event Brixton, they went with Eva, who cashes in his title shot when he's very clearly not ready, and it feels very out of the blue and very unsatisfying, because, again, they're stalling time. If Skrull then does win the title back at this show from Eva, I think this theory makes a lot of sense, because it would very much be a way of just stalling Skrull while you wait for Haskins to get back to the point where he can challenge for the title like he is going to be when he beats Ospreay here. Now, that could be completely wrong. This is all conjecture, but I think it would make quite a lot of sense depending on how things play out at 33.
I think he'd have won face Skrull at this show. The ending would have been some kind of screwy finish like it was, and they'd have kind of worked around it, because I think that the plan was always for Eva to cash in and win at some point. I don't know if they planned it for this show, the 5,000-to-1 show originally, but I'm sure they planned like Eva to win, and then the end game is Brixton later. So I don't think that would have changed booking immensely.
Well, no, but I'm more going with the idea that maybe it accelerated the Eva cash in. Which is why it felt so rushed and out of the blue, really. Because they had to do this to kind of stall for time while they got Haskins back into the main event spot.
Well, that certainly makes sense, yeah. That certainly makes sense. Because they do have another couple of shows, so it that might have been the case. Yeah, but I swear that... I think Haskins was originally scheduled to win Super Strong Style. That's the only reason that that makes sense to me, in terms of what they've done, like leading into it and since.
Now, moving on to the last match that's been announced. It's a match I'm really looking forward to. It's two big men teams, two of the best big men teams in the world, for the Progress Tag Titles, or Tag Shields. The London Riots versus War Machine, Hanson and Rowe. I think these two teams are going to work tremendously together. Hanson and Rowe are really, really underrated. They're a great big man team. And that they're so unover in Ring of Honor is criminal, because they're great. And when given opportunities to, they have great matches. They really do. And I think this is going to be one of them. Because I also really enjoy the Riots. I think the Riots are a great team who, when put in positions to succeed, will succeed. And hopefully they will here. War Machine, one of the few big men teams that don't rely too much on crowd brawling, and that's one of the things I really, really hate about big man wrestling. So hopefully War Machine will keep them in the ring, and it'll be amazing.
Yeah, I'm kind of overlooking this match a little bit, but it has potential to really exceed my expectations, be a really good match. If this match is really good, this could be like a fantastic... like top five all-time Progress show. If it's kind of mediocre, then maybe not. But like this combined with having a title match and the number one contender match could be three really good matches. Number one contender match is guaranteed to be great, but this could be really good as well.
I think the show hinges on that Skrull Eva match. It's like the booking for that, if they do it right, this could be a great show. Because everything else is set up to lead into that, if that's going to be the main. If the booking doesn't work, then it won't be as good as we're thinking. But on paper, it looks very strong.
Progress does have a really weird habit of their best shows on paper not really delivering.
Yeah, I have noticed this.
Well, we were looking at 5,000-to-1. We thought the 5,000-to-1 card was it didn't look that great, but then... going to it in person, it was very, very strong, and like I think it's probably one of the best shows they've done this year.
Yeah, and then we've had like the anniversary show. We thought that would be great, and it kind of wasn't.
Yeah, yeah. But still, Ospreay Haskins, you can't, can you?
Well, we kind of said that about Sumerian Death Squad versus London Riots, and then, yeah, the furniture happened.
Furniture issues.
But hopefully they'll break this curse of good cards turning out bad with this Chapter 33 show, because it looks really good. And I fully expect it to be great.
If Haskins and Ospreay have a bad match, I may have to eat my hat. I have some JR's barbecue sauce, so you know it probably won't be that bad.
It can't be. If it's bad, then I don't even know what we'll do.
Well, it'd be doomsday, wouldn't it? The end of wrestling as we know it.
I would have to change up my draft big board for the next show.
Okay, so the draft. Do you want to sell this, Rob?
Well, that's as good a segue as we're going to get, isn't it? Yeah, next episode, to coincide, kind of, with the WWE draft, we're going to be doing our own draft, but not a WWE one, because we're at the Brit Rest Roundtable, and it wouldn't make a whole lot of sense for us to do a WWE one, and also everyone else is doing a WWE one, so we thought we'd do something a little different. We've got two mystery guests on, that's the hooks to make sure you listen, to join the three of us, and we're all going to be drafting our dream rosters of European talent from the current scene. We'll go into more details on the actual episode, but that's kind of like what to expect for next episode, I guess. You said you enjoyed the Britties, so we're listening to feedback and doing more things like that.
Ha-ha. A
few other little things I wanted to get to before we finish the episode. All about streaming services, actually. Three new streaming services, subscription services have started up since the last episode. I think Southside was about a month ago, but I missed it and only just noticed now. But Southside On Demand has gone from an a la carte purchase per show method to a subscription service, like most WWE Network clones are. Basically, it's like, I think it's like £6 a month. And you can see all the shows that they have uploaded, which is a good deal. It's cheaper than previously you could buy a single show on Southside On Demand, so, you know, great value. And it really suits Southside, because Southside, in general, they rarely have a show where there's not at least one match I'm very interested in. But at the same time, they rarely have a show that I'm interested in the show as a whole. So a subscription service where I can cherry-pick matches from shows, perfect for Southside. Definitely something I'm going to be subscribed to at least a couple of months each year, so I can pick off a few matches. Fight Club Pro has also moved into the streaming game. They're not actually a streaming service, they're not a subscription service, but they're going to be available on an a la carte basis. You can purchase individual shows. Fight Club Pro in general, bit of a weird promotion distribution wise. Very hard to get hold of shows previously, so this at least is a step in the right direction, even if it's not a subscription service like I think we'd all want, really, because that's kind of the way things are done these days, and it's nice because it's cheaper. Who wants to be paying for an individual show in 2016? But yeah, Fight Club Pro, really good promotion that kind of doesn't get enough eyes on it. Ollie, I think you've been to a few of their shows?
Yeah, I've been to a couple, and the atmosphere there is intense to say the least, and that's where guys like Trent Seven and Tyler Bate make their trade. So yeah, they're really good, and it's good to hear. I can never watch any of their entire show live, because they end at a stupidly late time, and I need to get home. So maybe start the show earlier.
And the final service, which isn't actually launched yet, but it's going to be launching when WXW return to touring, and that's WXW Now. Now they've gone into this with their full professionalism that WXW always brings. They're very un-indie in their professionalism. The way they're launching this service with all these different levels of and tiers of shows. They've got the marquee events, which are going to be 5 camera shoots, featured events, 3 camera shoots, and then their tour shows, which are all going to be the best match taken out of them and put onto the new show called Shotgun Plus, which is going to air 1 hour each week, taking the very best matches from their tours. That's as well as their Shotgun YouTube show, rather than instead of it, which is good to hear. Yeah, they've also got like a bunch of documentaries that they're going to be launching with, a huge backlog, like over 100 hours easily, because they've been going like 15 years now and running a lot of shows. Yeah, basically, they're going into this uber professional, as I always like to call WXW, and it sounds like they're launching this network in a more professional way than WWE were when they launched theirs, who kind of like wandered into it backwards and then kind of got the hang of doing it. WXW, they're going to be firing straight from the off. They're even going to be trying to bring in other promotions onto their own service from the smaller indies in Germany, which is cool to hear, because I've never watched another German show apart from a WXW show, so I'd be interested to at least see what there is to offer, even if I'm not going to be watching every show, which, you know, I've got too much to watch anyway. The best thing about all these subscription services is it makes it all cheaper. The worst bit is, where the hell are we going to find all the time to watch all this stuff? Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
And it's also going to make WXW cheaper to follow, because previously it would be like €15 a show, €10 a show. Now it's €9.99 per month, which I'm not actually sure how much is that is post-Brexit.
That's £150 now.
That all sounds good. Plugs. Okay. Twitter at another Ollie. You can read my reviews of the last few progress shows on voicesofwrestling.com and my Euro notes on F4W.
I'm going to plug someone else, which is 3CW, the little indie promotion that I used to follow up in Middlesbrough. They're starting to run shows again. They're starting in November. They're on Twitter. I presume it's, let me just check, it's 3Count Wrestling. They're at, it would help if it loaded. Yeah, at 3Count Wrestling, the 3 being the number 3. So, yeah, go and check them out. They'll be back in 4 months, and I'll probably be there if I can get the time off work.
Great. You can find me at TheRDouble on Twitter, TheRDouble. You can find pretty much all of my writing over on voicesofwrestling.com. And also, take part in the Mid-Year Match of the Year project. It's I need your star ratings. Give them to me now. Also, voicesofwrestling.com/SeatGeek, voicesofwrestling.com/Amazon, voicesofwrestling.com/WWE Shop. All of those links, doesn't cost you a penny extra, will get us a little kickback, and it will help us keep running the site and podcasts like you're listening to right now. All help would be appreciated. Thank you. And good night, I guess.
Night.